Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, Mark. How are you?
I am doing well. Obviously, you're already getting some questions from our last episode where we talked about that new pending rule that's coming out.
Yes, we are. It's very hard to keep current, actually. We try to stay current with our blog and with this podcast. And I'm traveling a lot over the next couple of months, so I'm expecting people to bombard me with these type of questions. But we do try to stay up to date with what's going on. There was a USCIS stakeholders meeting on the phone yesterday, and somebody did try to bring it up, but USCIS kind of snubbed that. They weren't going to talk about that at that meeting. So I do know that this is on everyone's mind.
Right. So obviously the person that subscribed to the show knows exactly what we're talking about. Maybe they've already got their questions in, or maybe they have a couple more. They're going to follow up with you. For those that are joining the show for the first time, perhaps this is their first time listening, go back and listen to that show and you'll hear what Mona and I are talking about. But today we have a different topic and a guest. Mona, could you tell us a little bit more about our guest and today's topic?
Today's topic is I won't say it's a difficult topic, but it's an unknown, or there's a lot of misnomers about this topic, and that's third-party oversight, something that has been brought up a lot lately. And today, to really go into the depths and detail about it, we are very grateful to have Payman Attari from AZA. How are you, Payman?
I'm very well indeed, Mona. Thank you.
Oh, Payman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And it's nice to hear another English accent.
Yes. Well, I think my friends in England tell me that I sound American, yet I still get told here that I have an English accent. So I think I described as mid-Atlantic, Mona. Yours is still very English, but mine has, living in Kentucky has somewhat rounded my work.
Well, the real crucial thing is, what do you call the sport with the round ball?
Well, I call it football.
Good. You're still English.
I'm outnumbered here.
Payman, do tell the audience a little bit about yourself and a little bit about AZA.
Certainly. Well, AZA is, we are a registered investment advisory firm. And by that, I mean that we provide, obviously, investment advisory services. But there is a very distinct difference between what an investment advisor does and what a broker-dealer does. And we can go into that if you wish. But there is definitely a difference in separation of responsibilities. And from my background, I come from the world of finance. In fact, I was involved in the emerging markets with Deutsche Bank for many years. I was the head of research for the Europe, Middle East, Africa division. And I was involved in basically opening up some of the emerging markets that are currently the fashion, all the way from Southern Africa, Latin America, Russia, Eastern Europe, and the Middle East. Frankly, that's one of the reasons I got attracted to the EB5 markets, because I kind of regard EB5 as an emerging market. So I think there's a lot of opportunities there. It's a market that starts off with little oversight. A lot of participants who not necessarily at the beginning have a lot of experience in either finance or investments. And the market gradually starts moving towards maturity. We get more regulations, more oversight, experienced players come in. The size starts getting bigger, and that is what I find attractive about EB5 as well. So,
Payman, the thing is that many times what you do, your role is more or less in the background. So a lot of our listeners may not have heard of you. I'm sure some of our seasoned people have heard of AZA, but you are dealing now with more of the big players.
Yes, that's true. Up until recently, Mona, we were providing really just private client services, in other words, to individual investors. And we act very much like a wealth management company in that we have our clients and we go out and look at as many projects as we can. And the objective is for us to find a project that we believe has the right risk profile for our investors to invest in. So We have our criteria. We have obviously our the way in which we look at and assess the risks of the various projects. And as I said, we have a very low threshold as far as risk tolerance is concerned for EB-5 projects. So we tend to reject many projects that we look at, not because necessarily they're bad or badly structured, but because their risk profile from both immigration as well as investment matters fall outside of what we are looking at. So that's what we've been doing predominantly up until recently.
Payman, that's wonderful. We have a lot to discuss with you, and I'm sure there's going to be topics that we're going to be able to discuss in future podcasts, because due diligence is a huge issue. But today, actually, we wanted to focus on what's called third-party oversight, because this is a term which has been brought up a lot lately. In fact, it was brought up by the director, Nicholas Colucci, at the last stakeholders meeting. He said that USCIS want to encourage third-party oversight. But the feedback that we got after that was a lot of lawyers, immigration lawyers and developers and even investors don't really understand the terminology. So we thought for our audience today, we would simplify matters a little bit. I know your company does do third-party oversight, but before we even go into how it does it or what it does it, what exactly is third-party oversight when it comes to EB-5?
Okay, well, very good. Well, really, I think when you talk about third-party oversight, I think the market-specific area, and that's the disbursement of the funds. But in reality, third-party oversight can really be involved throughout the kind of the continuum of putting a deal together, as well as, you know, ongoing into the management of the transaction. So let me just explain. So I think there are, if you like, three areas of oversight that can be provided in the EB-5 market. The first is really upfront, is what I call the risk assessment, right? So that's when you have a third party coming in and providing the due diligence and actually looking at the project. But in our instance, it is more than just that. It is more than reviewing a project and writing about it and kind of outlining the strengths and weaknesses. Here we're talking about actually providing consulting and advisory services to the sponsors in terms of the structure of the whole transaction in a way in which protects investors' interests. So we would come in and not as the investment bankers, not as the lawyers structuring the transaction, but really, if you like, the independent fiduciary. And we provide advice as the deal is being structured, as the documents are being drafted, and all with the eye of making sure that the investors are protected and basically their interests are kept in mind. So that's kind of the first part of the oversight on behalf of all of the investors, but working with the sponsors of the project to put something together, producing at the end of it an objective and independent report as to what was done in order to protect investor measures and also what will be done going into the future as and when circumstances arise, for example, redeployment, which is another big topic in EB-5. So that's kind of the first part.
So Payman, so again, for people who really don't understand what we're talking about, I'm going to simplify what you've just said. So if there was a project which was out there and it was raising capital, your company comes in and oversights, meaning do they control the funds coming out of the account into the project's account?
So that's number two.
Oh, okay, sorry.
So that's kind of the service number one is what I call, the risk assessment and helping basically.
Oh, the due diligence side of things.
The due diligence side, yes. So second area is the financial checks and balances. So that includes monitoring the disbursement of the funds. It's actually two parts to that. One, of course, is the first part is the escrow. As you know very well, with EB-5 funds, the funds are raised from the investors. They normally are held in an escrow account at a bank. There are certain escrow conditions that need to be met before those funds are released from escrow. And so that's part one of this checks and balances, for there to be an independent verification that, yes, the escrow terms have been met and the funds therefore are released from the escrow account and into the NCE's account.
The NCE, for anybody not understanding, would be the company which is where the investor is making the loan to the project.
That's right. So right. That's if like the partnership that the investor is involved in and be. However, the next move, and that is that the partnership or this NCE then actually invests the money in the project itself, the entity known as the JC or the job creating entity. The money, of course, can be invested either as equity or preferred equity, or it can be a loan that is made from the partnership, from the NCE to the JC. Well, that is actually the critical part, because that's when the funds are finally going out of the partnership and into the third party's hands, where they're going to be using it for hopefully the intent that it was meant for, which is, of course, the project in order to create jobs.
So, Payman, right here, if I'm going to stop you right here for a second before you can go on. So as far as USCIS is concerned, they are encouraging this practice at this point. Why? So that to make sure that the whoever actually has their hands on the money are the correct people?
Absolutely, and that the money is actually expended and invested for the purposes that it was meant for. So in other words, if it's a construction project, the money actually goes to and for the purposes of construction and no other sundry measures, not to, you know, cover expenses of another company or cover the expenses of the developer or whatever it might be, but that the funds actually go for the purpose they were intended for. For example, if you have a bank, of course, banks do that. You know, banks don't, if anybody asks for a construction loan from the bank doesn't just release the money to the developer. The developer has to basically request a draw. They have to present evidence as to what they're using it for. Typically, banks would use an outside consultant in order to go to the site, make sure that the material ordered have in fact been delivered and they're being kept secure and that the construction is continuing. So every draw is checked and verified for the bank before a bank releases those funds as a loan. So this is no different. EB-5, basically the partnership is acting as the lender and or the investor. And so there is a need, and I think this is what USCIS is really referring to, is for a third-party oversight to verify that those funds are dispersed. When they are dispersed, they actually go for the purposes that that basically is outlined in the business plan. Well, if it's construction, it's for construction, and if it's, you know, whatever the project is, that the funds are used appropriately.
Okay, Payman, but if you have a good bank, say you have a good escrow bank like Signature, who are actual escrow agents, being different from what's just a pass-through bank, why would you need a third party?
Well, two reasons. First, on the escrow part, you may not necessarily need that. So if you have an escrow bank and an escrow agent such as Signature Bank, where they do verify and actually sit and make sure that the escrow terms are met before funds are released, you may not need a third-party verification of that particular transaction. Although, in many instances, for EB-5 purposes, the contracts are signed in a way in which the escrow agent is passing up that responsibility, that kind of fiduciary responsibility that they've actually verified, although when you mentioned Signature, although they do actually verify that the terms have been met. But even in that circumstance, you can have another third party just as from a perspective of liability to actually verify that indeed the terms have been met. In some instances, that's referred to as the subscriber's representative, another set of eyes that would be, if you like, a co-signatory together with the escrow agent for the release of the funds. But then more importantly is the other aspects. So the funds get first released from the escrow account and into the partnerships account. And then from there, they are then dispersed to the actual project. It's really the verification that it's not just the release from escrow and into another account. It's release of the funds from the partnership's account and into the project in which it's being invested. It is to verify that the funds are actually going in for that purpose rather than for, you know, paying fees and or any other, you know, expenses that actually do not qualify. So that is it's really the disbursement of the investment funds more than the release from escrow.
Right. Thank you. That I really see now, Payman, that what this does is it adds credibility, a huge amount of credibility to any project. So if we have any project that we're drafting and putting together, we do insist on them trying to have at least third-party people in order to manage the funds, just because it gives the investor some satisfaction, some confidence. But I really hasten to to add. I mean, aside from your due diligence at the beginning, just because you're verifying where the funds are going, it really does not give any guarantee that the project is going to succeed. It just means that they're going to do what they said they're going to do. But do you think that if in events like, you know, that, you know, when there's a fraud and there's a deliberate fraud and there's a deliberate evasion, like projects like JPEG or Chicago Convention Center, would a third party oversight have made any difference?
It's very difficult to tell, of course. I don't think there's ever can be a guarantee that even if there's an oversight, that fraud would not happen. And especially if it's deliberate fraud, you know, in the Bernie Madoff case, of course, where, you know, false documentation was prepared in order to show that the funds were actually being invested, whereas they were not. So, you know, if that is happening, it's really very difficult to be able to identify it as fraud. However, I think in the case of Chicago and JP, proper due diligence and also release of the funds to the actual project as construction, for example, would have helped. Somebody was telling me, for example, there was somewhere in the region of 130 accounts to which the money was being dispersed to in JP.
That's right. That's right.
So I think that when you have a third party verification who is actually requesting for evidence, show me the receipts because, you know, construction material have been ordered, or show me, you know, the expenditure, the expenses that the construction manager is asking for. So when it comes to real verification of those, I think if that had been present in the case of JP, it would have been exceedingly difficult to have moved the funds around from one account to another account, you know, without the knowledge of the investor. So I think it would have definitely helped in terms of, at the very least, to have identified the problems and raised the red flags at a much earlier stage, and hopefully, in fact, prevented it from happening altogether.
I actually happen to agree with you there. And where we would see it really being of benefit are to actually smaller smaller developers who are not so experienced, and especially certainly not experienced with using PPMs and investment money. Because what we have seen over the years is that smaller developers tend to easily get sidetracked if they have an excessive amount of money at one point. For example, if they have a little more money than they expected for construction, then they aren't really supposed to use that money for anything else other than the purpose intended. Or if there is leftover money, they are supposed to go back to the investor and explain that they're going to use it for another purpose, and this should be full disclosure. But that's not been happening. That's why there's been a spate of I'm not sure if they're prosecutions, but investigations with regards to certain projects, again, just because they've misused some of the investment money.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, with developers and or product sponsors that are not, you know, experienced, oftentimes the whole thing starts very innocently. You could see it. You know, they expect some fees, for example, development fees, and you know, the project is somewhat going slowly. They may have something else happening, and the thinking goes that, well, you know, I can take the fees out now because they're going to come to me anyway at the end of the year and use it in order to get this other project going. And in the meantime, you know, we'll keep this project moving along. And then, of course, you know, one thing leads to another. Things just start getting more complicated. And, you know, the money should never have been moved from that account. It should never have been commingled into another fund, into another project. And sometimes this is a lack of experience, and again, and never done with the intent of defrauding of anybody.
Right.
But it just kind of gets worse and worse until it gets to the point that basically, you know, Humpty Dumpty cannot be put back together again.
That's a good English analogy.
Well, Payman, let me ask you, you've talked about the benefits of having third-party oversight and, you know, some of the things that may have mitigated in the past. You know, we use the example JPEG. But let me ask you, you know, how do you ensure that third-party oversight is in the project? Is it written into certain statements or agreements? You know, how do you make sure that third-party oversight really gets, you know, the power and the authority and ultimately the enforcement and the ability to allow releases of funds? How does that happen tactically?
Well, actually, that's a very good question, Mark. So for us, yes, we do insist that basically the involvement of the third party verifier, if you like, we call it the fiduciary services, are incorporated in the deal documentation. So if we are acting as the full fiduciary and going in, providing, you know, the first part, the due diligence and consulting and advisory, moving on to next, which is this escrow and loan disbursement services. And then finally, the third part, which continuing to monitor the project and all aspects of it and report to the investors. We do want the full fiduciary responsibilities to be outlined in the offering memorandum, that agreement together with our reporting, et cetera, to be sent to every investor who is looking at the project so that they're aware of our presence, who we are, what our responsibility is to protect that investor, what will be done in the future to protect that investor, and of course, all the agreements with regarding to the disbursement. So that is on the full fiduciary. On the loan disbursement and escrow, yes, we kind of write it in with the escrow agreement. You know, the way we're currently working is that we're providing these verification services as an independent third-party entity. And so that is written in with the escrow, in the escrow agreement that the developer signs, of course, and we continue providing those services. And they ought to, of course, be mentioned. This, I think, becomes a selling point. It ought to be mentioned in the offering material so that the investors know that there is, in fact, the services being provided by a third-party entity and for their protection. So I think they ought to.
Okay, great. So it sounds like both the deal document, the escrow loan agreement, as well as the offering materials as well, it should outline that third-party oversight is there. And if it's not, that's something that an investor can see, hey, where is the third-party oversight? And you know, rally ask that question. So right. Monish, sounded like you had a question as well.
Yes, you know, with something as important as this payment, I know there are other companies such as NES out there who do the same services. How is AZA different from NES?
In several ways. One is that we're a registered investment advisory firm. By that, we actually have, we are bound by regulation to act as a fiduciary. So we are bound by regulation to put the investors' interest first. And that is why when we get involved in these transactions, we are in fact acting as the independent fiduciary on behalf of all of the investors in the partnership. So we might be paid by the partnership, but we are in effect representing all of the investors in that partnership. So that's the one difference. Number two, the NES really is only involved in the escrow and loan disbursement services. They are not involved in providing either the first part, which is the due diligence and or kind of structure, you know, reporting on the structure of the transaction, nor are they involved on the continuing to monitor the project from a financial perspective, from a, you know, the immigration perspective, and to report to the investors. So the first and the third service that we provide, NES does not provide at all. And in terms of the actual, they do a very good job as the manager of the escrow or the co-signer on the escrow. They're very big in that part. Of course, they've been providing it for many years for the EB-5 services. I think they're now also getting involved in the loan disbursement aspects and verifying that. However, I think that our verification is somewhat different. I think that what we actually do is very much is what a bank would do when it comes to disbursement, which is to verify where the funds end up, and including bringing in construction consultants that provide the site visits and go and make sure that, in fact, the construction is happening and the funds that are drawn are being implemented and used in the purposes that they are meant for. I think the NES verification is somewhat different to that. It's based on a letter of verification from the sponsor or the developer that, in fact, the funds have been used appropriately. So somewhat different.
That's wonderful services, really wonderful. Mark, you can really see how EB-5 has evolved, that it's evolved to such a stage that it's requiring services like the one that payments company AZA can provide.
Right. I can also see potential risk if there aren't services like the one that AZA and payment provides not being incorporated in the due diligence and the offering documents and the escrow loan agreements. So
yes, I agree. I think that's a very valid point moving forward. Yeah.
But who should take the initiative? Should it be the investor or the project developer? Because it sounds like the project developers would pay.
Well, the project developers might pay and payment would answer this. But I think it's the people, whichever attorneys draft the project documents to really go forward and insist on this. Because a lot of project developers don't even know what's required or expected.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
Well, it's quite evident also that these type of measures should be incorporated in the documents. So whoever drafts the documents for the project, the PPM and all the offering memorandum, etc., I think that third-party verification should really be part of the norm.
It sounds like it.
I agree with you too, Mona. In fact, you know, just as a tidbit of information, we were first approached by one of the larger firms in EB5 who helped develop a structure of these transactions to come up with these services because they thought that this would be really valuable for the developer clients. And in fact, from a liability perspective as well, it's something that they were looking for. And I know that that you also have been talking about the need for such services as well. So it does make sense for the attorneys who are putting this and structuring these deals to potentially suggest that to their clients, the developers as well.
Well, thank you for that, Payman. I certainly see how having this would be crucial in the offering documents and all the documents that are drafted up for the project developers by the attorneys. And honestly, I can also see where it would be a disadvantage if this wasn't incorporated into those documents. It could be some challenges either finding investors, or if they do find investors, perhaps those investors would unfortunately have challenges in the future. Well, Payman, thank you so much for coming on today's show.
Absolute pleasure, Mark.
Thank you, Payman. I'm sure we're going to hear from you again on this show because there's still so much more to talk about. And I'm sure as well we're going to get questions relating to third-party oversight because it's such a new topic too. People really still don't quite understand it. And then when you financial people get out there and you start using your financial lingo, you lose people as well. You lose the audience, rather. But thank you again. Thank you very much for coming on the show and explaining to us, mere mortals, about the world of finance. Thank you.
I really enjoyed it, Mona. Thank you for having me on. And you know what I need you to do the translations for me. So
thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.